figure out your health and your wealth. But don't forget your spiritual life. It's about having better sex and doing a good thing and doing the best that you can. It's about getting better. We're working on getting better together. Hi guys, thank you for listening to the podcast, wherever you listen to it, for watching it on YouTube, or live on Twitch is my favorite way to do it. Mondays at 12:15, 12:30, you somewhere around 12 o'clock. Mondays in the afternoon is usually where we can do these live affirmations. You can find out who the guest for my podcast will be a little bit early. You could just get your affirmations, get your week started early. You could see how I'm sorely in need of a haircut. You could see I'm wearing my Cobb's Comedy Club hoodie because I miss doing stand-up so much right now. You could see a lot of things. You could just join the Twitch Ron_Funches community. Join the Funch Bunch. Hang out with us. We've been having a great time playing a lot of Call of Duty Outbreak recently. Playing Mario Kart on Sunday with Halston and his fiance. That's been fun. We've been doing comedy nights. Oh, and also my birthday is March 12th. For those who do not know, we are 12 days away from my birthday. And I'm also 12 days away from a new movie that I'm in coming out called Dark Web. Cicada 3301 is a long title. It sounds like a 90s action flick, and it kind of is. It's fun. I watched it. I think it's a really good movie, probably the best movie I've ever been in. So we're going to do a little premiere party on my Twitch. We're going to all hang out. If you want to purchase the movie and stream it and we will watch it together, you can go to my social media. We'll find out the exact start time and when we'll be doing that. Either way, the movie comes out March 12th, but if you want to watch it with me on my birthday on my Twitch, Ron_Funches, it'll be a great time. It'll be an old-fashioned movie premiere. We can watch it together. So it'll be a great, 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 great opportunity. Let's do it. Other than that, you know how to support the podcast. You can go to patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron and support us there. You can get your own personal affirmations at the $10 level. But at any level you support us, we'll give you thank you notes. You get a shout out to the podcast when I remember to log into the Patreon and look up the shout outs. You get exclusive episodes. So you get a lot of fun little things. So check it out. Patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron. You can also get your own t-shirts. You're getting better t-shirts. You get high watch wrestling t-shirts. Your Ron Funches t-shirts at comediantees.com. Go to the Ron Funches store. And other than that, let's get going. And you know how I like to get started. I hope you're feeling strong. I hope you're feeling brave. I hope you're feeling loved. I hope you're grateful for that love. I hope that as we get closer to the year anniversary of this pandemic kind of kicking off, that you're able to mentally maintain that mile marker doesn't break you down and make you feel like nothing has changed and things continue to get worse. And I just know I think that's what it wants us to do. That's how I'm starting to feel. As again, my birthday is coming up on March 12th. And that my birthday was like the last day of normalcy that I had. It was having a good birthday. Actually, it was the day before. March 11th was the last day of normalcy. March 12th, I was planning to do a birthday show in Honolulu and had to cancel that and fly home, make sure my son was safe, make sure we could get toilet paper, make sure everything was held down at the house because things were looking insane. And I just want to focus on the amount of progress that I've seen since then. Because when you look around and you can still see so much negative, there's still clearly people are struggling health-wise because of the pandemic, financially because of the pandemic. I still don't do much stand-up at all. The last time I did a live show was in November, and it is March, so that has been a long time for me. But been a lot of positives, a lot of positives. And I feel that I don't have to wake up every day and wonder about what our leaders are tweeting out and what they're doing to ruin the reputation of the place I live in. So that feels nice. I don't feel like they're necessarily doing a lot to undo a lot of the bad stuff that has happened. It feels like you could be a little bit more proactive in getting these checks and this money out that people have been waiting and relying on, and other countries have been giving to their communities. So the fact that we're supposed to be a leader in the free nation, and the fact that we aren't taking care of our community makes me feel a little bad. But not much of a but there. That's just how I feel. It's just not great. That's lame. It sucks. But I've seen a lot of positives in the community in general of people being more active in their life, more active in their community, more active in politics, more active in being in their health. And I think that's important. Again, as I get, I've been struggling back and forth, been really focused on my health, losing a little weight, getting focused. Then, you know, feeling low, feeling down, wanted to order some extra cheap meal stuff. Unfortunately, my wife had my back and she was like, you need to go to bed, and got me back focused. But I've been smoking so much weed, like way more than normal. And normal is a good amount, but I'm trying to get back focused. Got my weed safe. You just got to know who you are. Check in with yourself and just make sure you don't go too far off or deep in. That's how I look at it. You can play with them degrees a little bit. You be like, hey, I'm smoking a bit much today. I'm not doing as well as I was mentally before, and I'm overdoing it. I don't have much shit to do. But just know that. Pump those brakes. Especially on a Monday when the week is starting up, I get my weed kitchen safe out, lock my weed up, go about my business, force myself in a little tolerance break, and build it back up, because I'm feeling good. I mean, one of the best things that I saw was that movie, The Dark Web, Cicada 3301. And I know you probably think I'm just promoting shit, and in some ways I am. However, in a more truthful way, it just takes a lot. Like, I don't normally like to watch the movies I'm in. I don't like to see the stuff I've done because I see a lot of mistakes in the work I do. I see how much growth there still is to be done. But I was really proud of myself for the work in this movie that I did. I want to be an actor. I want to be a leading man. And this was the first time where I got some proof where I'm like, oh, he is a leading man. He is good at this. He does bring heart and can be a big part of an action movie franchise. And I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know. The movie might bomb. I know nobody might see it at all. But that's not what growth is about. That's not what about true success is about. True success isn't about, if you have $5 million that just dropped in your pocket, do you feel more successful just because other people know you got $5 million or just having that $5 million? Me personally, I just like to keep that money and keep my motherfucking mouth shut. But I like to avoid drama. That's just who I am. But the point is, it's just the same thing with whatever work you're putting in. I think a lot of times I get caught up. We all get caught up in wanting credit and wanting people to see that work and wanting to be popular and wanting people to go, look how great this person is. Look how awesome they are. Look at what they did. But at the end of the day, the only person that really needs to know is me. I need to know that I'm good at that. So that the next time I have an opportunity, the next time I have an audition, the next time I have a chance, I believe in myself. And that's what belief and faith can go in. You can have a lot of blind faith. Blind faith is just believing you can do it with no proof and no knowledge and no background of knowing that you can. But when you have confidence is having that faith and knowing you've done it because you've done stuff like it before. You've worked your way through it. You grinded your way up. You took the stairs and not the elevator. And that's just something I've been thinking about because I saw that video, that kid yelling at Cam Newton. You see a lot of people, just a lot of negativity, a lot of people clout chasing, as they say, where they try to take the work that somebody else has built up, poke a hole in it, and then do that in order to build their own fame. But that's not building anything. You're not creating anything. You don't have your own brand. You know, that's not going to last the test of time. If you're building off of other people's work or taking advantage of other people's work, you got to know who you are, what you're capable of, what your lane is, what makes you special, and just lean into that. And it might take a long time. It might be slow growth. It might be slow go, But the next thing you know, time keeps moving either way. So whether 10 years from now you've been working on your goal or 10 years from now you weren't working on your goal, the time is still going. And I like to salute people, you know, not be a big name dropper, but people who motivate me, I like to bring it up. And Seth Rogen has been a person that's motivated me in many, many ways, like just through comedy. The fact that he's like a mentor to me comedically, besides the fact that I think that I might be a year older than him. which is fun to think of because I feel like I grew up watching him. But just in everything he does and staying true to himself and what he does, what he believes in, and comedically, weed wise, whatever. And he's a big star because of being who he is and grinding it out. And also now he just started his own weed company, Houseplant. I'm gonna give me some of that Houseplant weed. It looks delicious. I want some. I'm gonna pull some. I'm not even gonna lie to you. I'm gonna fucking straight up email my manager and be like, find out where that house plan is. I don't need it for free. I'm down to pay, but we need it. But the point is, even someone like Seth Rogen, someone who's been famous forever, he talks about how this was a 10-year dream of his to create this, that it took 10 years of work. And he could have given up at any point and just been like, you know what? Fuck it. I just smoke weed. Who gives a shit? I'm already doing well. I'm already active. But this was his passion and this was his dream. And he made it happen. And it took 10 years of work, even with his skills, his background, his affluence, all of those things still didn't stop him from having to become knowledgeable and having to become an expert in that field to make this work for him. And that is within any business. And that's the type of, that's just what getting better is all about. We look for inspiration in all areas and all ways. So just wanted to say, Seth Rogen, we salute you. I would love to get you on the podcast as well. And I can't wait to smoke that weed. And our guest today kind of wraps all that up together. A person, a comedian, an actor, a producer, a person who does just about everything in their own lane, in their own way, finding out in a power couple themselves, just that balance between that family life, that Hollywood life, has worked with Seth Rogen in films like The Disaster Artist. So boom, it all came back together, baby. Our guest today is the one, the only, the undeniable Paul Scheer. Enjoy it. I got a solo sing on a yoga mat out in Reseda.
Sorry, my kids and my wife were out of town and I was just talking to them on their phone and I just forgot what time it was for a second.
Oh, classic. Classic. Yeah. Throw the kids and wife under the bus maneuver.
It's very hard to get off the phone with a child, especially your child.
Yeah, that's true. Well, not as they get older. My son's 18 and I went away for a week and a half and I was like, did you miss me? And he was just like, no.
So. I know. I'm so like my all June talks about is like, you know, one day they're gonna just not want to talk to us, and you got to take. You know, I'm like, they'll just enjoy the moment now. But it's like I love that they want to snuggle and be in and have fun.
It is fun when I occasionally can get the giant man to snuggle me. Oh. It's actually, I'm like, this is fun. I can see this is a good life. I can see how this could be.
You know, I will say that I was on a movie with Harold Ramis. He was the director of this movie, Year One. And his son came on set. His family came on set. And they were all older, right? They were like college age kids. And the amount of physical affection that they had has always been something that I've looked at and just been like, wow, I would love to be a dad who can, you know, get that level of physical emotion that late in life. It's, you know, it's so rare to see. Maybe we'll be the generation that does that.
I think so. I mean, I definitely put it on my son. That's how we greet each other every morning. And he's usually putting dishes away in the dishwasher. I come downstairs and he comes over and hugs me and does a little triple kiss, kisses me on the cheek and forehead. And I do the same to him. And I hope
I love that
for till I die. Hope he does that to me on my deathbed.
Oh, I love it all. It's so great.
How old are your kids?
They are right now. No, geez, I'm just blank at 4 and 6.
That's a good age.
Yeah,
that's
four and six.
Hey.
Yeah, we're having a blast. It is truly like the moment that I love is we can just get in the car and go. Like we just went to Oregon and we rented a car. We got in, you give them a Kindle and they can play some games, but they're down. Like, you know, it's like no diapers. They can tell you when they have to go to the bathroom. They know what they want. They know what they don't want. You can go and stop at drive-thrus. Like there's like a level of, I guess I'm still in that moment of like, oh my God, do we bring the thing? Did we do that? Do we have that? You know, it's like, now we don't need to do any of that. They can kind of roll with us. And that is, and of course we're in the quarantine, so it's a little bit harder, but that idea of just like going, getting on an airplane, so much easier, like all of it. I love it all.
Yeah, it felt like, I mean, like I was in a different position when I had my son and
right.
But either way, I don't think monetarily it would have mattered, but it feels like the first 5 years, it was all like, just like, please don't, I hope I don't kill this kid. I hope I don't destroy this kid. I hope I don't break them.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
Like year five comes and you're like, oh, they're sturdy now.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, but that's the thing. Like I literally pulled a muscle in my glute. That was so bad because I was doing these crazy squats in bathroom stalls, and my youngest kid is a heavier kid. So like I'm squatting, trying to get him on a toilet, get him off a toilet, but I'm like cramped in the space because like I was basically doing the worst version of a squat in a bathroom stall. Like I pulled a muscle from lifting my kid on and off the toilet. And I was like, this is a sad moment. I love it. But I'm also like, I'm done with those moments. Like, yeah, you know, I'll wipe a butt. I don't need to get down. I don't need to like be, you know, again, crouched down at a toilet view anymore. And that's a pleasurable experience for me.
Yeah, it's growth in all regards. Paul, I will tell you one of the ways I like to start this podcast is by telling people why I wanted them on the podcast and what I like about them. And why I wanted you on the podcast is that I went and did your Twitch show. And then you reminded me that you had never been on my podcast. And that was an easy reminder to rectify. But what I like about you is that you're just a funny human being in every moment. Like, you know, you're a true comedian. And not only that, I really just kind of enjoy and I try to mimic your work ethic and how hard that it seems and how much effort you put into everything and how much it seems like you just live in comedy and you have a family in comedy. And these are the types of things that I want in my life. And so I just consider you as like a low key, like a model for what you would want in a career, because you kind of like you constantly do work that is known and enjoyed and raved about by the people who tastemakers, I guess.
Well, you are this is the nicest thing to hear. And I'm trying to hear it. And mm-hmm. I feel
I
like
that is difficult. It's hard when
it is hard.
It could tell right when because you cut me off. So I could tell.
I let it go for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I didn't shush it off either. I go, oh, come on. I'm hearing it. And I'm excited to be here on your show because I feel the same way about you. I think that, you know, there's something about, you know, this business that we are in. And I come from more of the improv and sketch world. That's how I kind of came up. And I always find, I love collaboration and I love people who are down to kind of play. And when I first really met you, you know, I knew you as somebody who is incredibly funny, but I thought of you more as a stand-up. And I always feel like there's this idea like, oh, there's a wall here, right? Because you're not going to want to maybe come over to our side. You know, you may be like, I want to do things a certain way or that. And I always feel like you are so playful and down. And I think it shows in all of your work, like you can do so many different things with so many different people, but then retain your own sense of self when you do your solo things. And I think what I love ultimately about you too is you do something that I don't think a lot of people do publicly, which is talk about these deeper emotions and where you're at and mentally where you're at and kind of putting that in the forefront is a really I think an important thing that sometimes people don't think about or they don't want to talk about because it feels like too revealing. So I
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate that you see me in that regard. That's what I agree. And I just think it's important. And also, I just think it's kind of fun to paint with more of the colors that you have access with. Why if I might always want to just always be set up punchline.
Right.
If I can actually talk to you about real things that I enjoy that matter to me, and then we find a joke in that, it's usually the thing that hits the hardest, you know? It's like when you watch a Pixar movie or anything like that. It's not like they just came in and gave you joke.
Right.
There's always a story to hang your hat on.
Well, I love collaboration. Like really, truly, to me, one of the things I started out in this business, wanting to be as a kid. Like I loved Eddie Murphy. I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. I didn't even know what that meant. I just loved that, like comedy. And, you know, when I first saw improv, there was something that just blew me away because I thought, okay, well, there's only acting or stand-up, right? You could do comedic acting, or you could get on stage and write material. And then I saw these people on stage truly building together, like painting, like, you know, there's that metaphor they say, like a lot of times when you are doing an improv scene, like one person does one stroke and the next person does the next, but you're yes anding that brush stroke and you're making something really beautiful together. And I think that in this business, we are often pitted against each other because like, oh, you got this or that's mine. And I did that, my idea. And I think the people I look to and the people who are super happy are the people who are, you have your own sense of self, but you also are going and knowing how much other people can make you A, look good, make you funnier, and just open your worldview, you know? And that's something that I think is, you know, for me, something I always am striving for, but that was so exciting to me, I think on a base level. And then as I kind of continue to do this, you make these connections and these friendships and these trust relationships too. You know, like I trust you to take care of me on some level. Maybe it won't always work. It may not be the best thing, but we're going to make sure that we don't treat each other poorly.
Mm. It's wonderful. I never really thought about the improv relationships that you can build like that and from constantly doing sketches together and this level of trust that you'd have. And it kind of shows in the fact that you've been able to kind of rework with the same people over and over again. And that's something new I'm just discovering as my career, gets past its freshman phase. And now I'm like, oh, I've worked with this sound person before. I've worked with
you
before. I've worked with you. Oh, I know you. What's up, Eddie? I know you, you know, and it gives me just more of a sense of confidence. And like you say, a sense of trust and going like, oh, I know, like I still to this day, because I'm still working on myself. I get body issues sometimes. I have self-confidence issues about my bald spot. And I would go into a place and I'd be happy, like, oh, they want the best for me. They're going to take care of me. They're going to let me know if they need to fill this in or do something. And there's other places like, oh, they don't give a shit about me because they never met me before.
Well, I think there's there's so many things I want to say. The one thing I'll say is this. I believe
you could say a lot of things.
I'll say a bunch. The thing I do believe on a base level is 90% of the people that you work with in this business want you to be the best version of yourself. And I learned that early on in my career when I was doing auditions. One of my first gigs I ever had was I wrote, Scholastic books would come to school and they do a book fair and stuff like that.
Of course I know.
Yeah. So I was hired to write promo videos for Scholastic books. It was a silly gig and I did like a Siskel and Ebert kind of thing with two kids talking about books. It was whatever.
Very I remember that.
So it was at a school. It was, they go all across the country, these kids. And I was casting that because I wrote it. And I remember that was the first time I was in an audition room on the other side of the table. And it was the first moment where I realized, first of all, there's not that much difference between good or who gets it and who doesn't get it, right? It's sort of like, oh, well, that person partners with that well, or we have one of these, but we need one of those. And you know, the amount of people who do badly, if at all, are so small. Sometimes it's just a thing like, oh, that's what I want. That's how I pictured it. And I think when once I realized that, and this is something I kept to keep on telling myself though, too. I mean, I can understand it, but I don't always believe it. But it's like, there's not a rejection of you. It's never like you're bad or you're ugly or you're to this or you have a bald spot. It's so small, like what gets you in or what gets you out. And once you kind of like give over to that, like it's not a rejection because you're bad or you know, it's a rejection because of a million small little details in a way, right? And it's like, and I think people genuinely, when I've been in those audition rooms, you always want people to score. I never want to like see anyone fail. And I think also, you feel when people are not doing well, and I never hold that against them either, but I believe that most people want you to do well. And then I believe that there are 10% of people who are like so inwardly facing and assholes, and they don't create an environment that is welcoming, and they don't care about you because it's all about them. They're focusing the attention on them. And when you step on one of those sets where someone is focused on yourself, it is like a night. It's like Pleasantville, that movie. It's like, it's black and white going to color. Like you see a difference. Like it's like, oh wow, I've never experienced this. And I remember early on in my career, I had gotten a job that I was very, very excited about. And I was like, this is a big movie. This is going to be so exciting. And I had worked in all these amazing places. I've done my own shows. I created my own sets. And I went on there and I felt this coldness, and it clammed me up, and I tried to get out of it, and I just couldn't get out of it because it wasn't letting me breathe or do any, or even feel like I could make a mistake. And I made a decision to myself that from now on in, whenever I look at anything, I'm like, are these people assholes? What do I know about these people? Like, yes, the gig may be good, but who's going to protect me here a little bit? And having that, you know, and I think that comes with a little bit of success too, like that you can say no, but it's really an important lesson to learn. Like you can say no, mm-hmm. You can say no, and you can, and because the horrible experience doesn't equate to like career success. If anything, it may even make you more stagnant because you weren't able to show yourself being good.
No, I agree. If you're not in a position to shine, I've been on both sides of the where people want to play with you and they want to build. And I kind of call it like problem solving on set, where mm-hmm. it's more about like, what can we do to get the best shot? And then I've seen places where it's just like, no, I'm the star. I want all the focus on me. If somebody comes up with something good, let's rewrite it and give it to me.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. And so I wonder, because it's the way that you talked and just the fact that, you know, I've been to your production company and I know that you love work. Was that moment or the thing before that made you want to be like, I want to keep making projects myself. I want to keep working on be more, I guess, selective in what I'm doing, or what focused you on and starting your production company and making more projects yourself?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I will say this too. Like there's a little bit of a, like, I worked with this guy, John Stern, who made Children's Hospital, and he also produced my show, NTSF, and I worked with him a bunch. But his production company, that is his abominable, they make a lot of stuff, and I worked with him for a long time mm-hmm. As a partner. So what made me want to produce, though, and I kind of now have expanded that circle. Like, we worked together for a long time, and I've kind of gone off now, and I work with other people. But what made me want to do this was one of the first things I ever did in my career was Human Giant, which is a show I did with Aziz Ansari and Rob Hubel, directed by Jason Wolner, who just directed Borat 2, amazing writer, hilarious writer, and an amazing director. And so my first like plunge into this world was writing, starring, and having a say in the edit. And it was really fun for me to be there. And I will say that there were some pressures in that situation that I was learning for the first time too, that I would do differently if I knew what I knew now. But I always felt that this business can be very lonely when you're waiting for people to call you. Mm-hmm. And people don't see you the way that you always want to be seen. So you need to be active in trying to show people that you are more than just one thing. Like, you are not just a tool in the toolbox. You are your own toolbox. And you know what? You can rent that toolbox, or you can build something with that toolbox. You know, I haven't really thought about that metaphor so strongly. I don't know if that totally works. But I guess the thought being, like, when I started doing The League, I was doing this character, this Andre character, which I really loved. And The League was amazing. Improvised show where we were working off an outline with one of the creators of Curb and his wife, Jackie. They gave us so much free reign, more than any show, to build and create these characters. But the character I created for myself on that show, based on what they had for me, really, to me, I was afraid was going to pigeonhole me as doing one thing. And I think once you show people one thing, they're like, oh, more of that one thing. And then they'll just keep on copying that. And then you'll run out, and then no one will want you to do anything. And so it was that moment where I said to myself, I need to figure out something else I want to do. I saw it very early on. Like, what else can I do? And that's when I was kind of doing stuff at Children's Hospital. And I was writing episodes there, and I talked to one of the guys, and I said, I have this idea, you know, how Children's kind of takes a shot at like these medical shows. I want to take a shot at like these action shows. And he's like, well, write something. And I did. And I wrote myself kind of this Jack Bauer-esque character, this, you know, action star character, Trent Hauser. And we did this show, and, you know, I wore a wig. I looked very different. I acted very different. And got to the point where I was actually doing two shows simultaneously. I'd end on The League, and I go and write and star and direct on NTSF. And it was really fulfilling for me because it gave me this outlet. And I think even to take a step back from there, doing that at UCB is how I came up. Like, UCB instilled that, I guess, idea in me in the beginning. UCB was like, you want to perform on the stage, write your stuff, act in your stuff, direct your stuff, and publicize your stuff. So from the very beginning, I guess, yeah, I really, the UCB gave me that. The Upright Citizens Brigade, like, let me perform on stage 5-6 nights a week in the very beginning when they were first starting. And they're like, what's the next show? What do you got? And we would come together and try to build these things. And, you know, that was my college education, my college, like, performing arts education. I didn't go to school for performing. I just performed my ass off. And I was in Union Square passing out flyers for a show of a theater that no one gave a shit about. And, you know, and figuring out ways to get people there through the door. Like, we made scenes out in Central Park or, you know, Union Square Park to get people to be like, oh, that's funny. Now I'll go see the show. So it was like this idea of like, you always need to be creating your own stuff. And yeah, so I guess that led to Human Giant, which then led to NTSF and all the other things I kind of did. And so I never want to stop that. And then just to add one more point to it, I realized what I really want to do, in addition to me making stuff, I want to help people realize how to make stuff. Mm-hmm. And I learned very quickly too, there's two ways of doing this. And back when I was doing this with John Stern, I was like, hey, do you want to make the thing that you want to make? It may not be the money that you're going to get at, you know, Fox, or it may not be the money you're going to get at Comedy Central, but you'll get to actually write it and make it, and it'll be on, and you have like a piece of tape. Because I got tired of this idea of going like, well, I have this script, but no one made it. Or I went out for this pilot, but I got close. Like, why don't you just make it? And yes, we did this show called The Real Housewives, which was like a parody of like The Real Hot Wives, which is a parody of The Real Housewives franchise. And it was created by Casey Wilson and Danielle Schneider. And we shot these seasons very quickly. And the money was low, but we made this thing that people really liked. And because there weren't big contracts and stuff, we actually got to make it. And I was a big believer, and still am, like, in just make it. And then you actually have something, you've made something, and that's going to help elevate your career on some level, because so many people have the thing that hasn't been made. But if you can actually make it. So I really have been passionate about how can I help people get stuff made? And I've worked with so many great people over the time, and sometimes things have worked and some things have not worked. And now I'm just trying to elevate that and figure out how can I do that on a slightly bigger scale, And that's, you know, that's the goal.
That's very interesting to me. And I think timely for me to hear, because I related to so much of what you just said. A big part of I remember my first year of auditioning here when I moved to LA, and just sitting in my backyard in my little shitty comedy flop house that I lived in and just being like, oh, they don't know what I am. They don't get what I am. They've not. And I go like, that's not a negative. That's a positive. And I just have to turn it into a positive and I have to show them what I am. Cause the first thing I got was like a role on, this movie called Get Hard, where I was a gang member and it was funny. Yeah. And then it kept being like, well, now you're a gang member. Now you want to be more another gang member. And then I was lucky enough to get The Undateable. And then it was like, well, we want to give you another show where you just walk by and say a joke and right. That's it. And it's like, well, no, I'm getting better. You don't see, I'm going to acting class every week. I'm pushing myself. I'm getting better. I got that when I didn't know what I was doing at all.
Well, yeah. And I think that honestly, we are in a business where, and this is nothing, like, I'm not bitter about the business at all. I think you just have to understand you're in a business where I think people don't have time to be like, who's Ron? What is Ron up to? What is he doing? They go, I saw Ron in this and he fits the mold for this thing. So let's put him in that thing. So you have to keep on showing people another thing so they can. You give them more, like you basically go, oh, he can do this and that. Oh, okay. And you have to kind of keep on serving, you know, like flipping over a deck of cards. Like, here's another thing. Here's another thing. But it's hard because unless people are seeing you do that or they don't trust it, you know, they don't know. And I think some of it comes down to having a good friend vouch for you. And that's something that I've been very lucky to have in this business. And it's a way that I've run when we did Human Giant. I'm like, oh, Nick Kroll is very funny. Like, let's get Nick Kroll in the show. Or, you know, Brian Posehn is very funny. Like, not that people need to know who Brian Posehn is, but like we knew who was funny and then MTV trusted us. And so there were names there that never were on TV, but we were like, no, they're going to be great. And then they would come on and be like, who is that guy? The guy was really funny. And it's like, and so I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that that's why we have these relationships too. It's like, oh yeah, I know Ron's going to do this. He'll kill it. And that's the best advocate. Like Black Monday. Yes. I auditioned for it. Yes. I had to meet Don Cheadle and go in front of Sony and everybody and do it. But in that room, not only did I have Seth and Evan, who I'm friendly with and worked with, and I think have done good work for, but David and Jordan, who created that show. When David called me up and said, hey, I want you to look at this part. I think you would kill this role. Like that's him knowing me, not as a casting agent or anything like that, but him knowing me as a performer going, I think you could have a take on this. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't guaranteed, but it was him thinking out of the box that brought that to me. That part that I'm doing on Black Monday was written for a 50-year-old white man. You know, so it was like a different thing. It was, I believe that like sometimes it's not even showing the casting director. It's just showing the people that you know in comedy. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was funny. I like that thing. I like that bit. And you don't even know how people are seeing it. Are they seeing it on your Instagram? Are they seeing it? Wherever they, who knows? They just see it. And then they go, oh, yeah. I remember that guy. That guy's good. Or that girl's good. You know, that's how I kind of feel like things happen.
Yeah, I guess it's just like you talked about, continue to build relationships and build in trust. And if people or trust you more, the more they're willing to vouch for you. And that's important. What are your goals right now, Paul? But I know you talked about helping other people, but I want to get more specific, like just because we love talking goals, spiritual, personal, family, work. What are
goals? I love it. Well, here's something that I want to bring up with you. I have trouble with goals. I know that you have like, you do like a vision board and I love that idea. Like I love that idea and I have a hard time like making goals for myself. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if I'm protecting myself. I don't know. And I think I have to like force myself sometimes to really sit down and think what I want. Like sometimes goals scare me. I sometimes feel like if I make a goal and I don't get it, have I failed? Mm-hmm. Am I not opening myself up to another opportunity? Like by making a goal and I'm like, well, I missed that goal, but I got this goal. So then I try to make goals that are general, but then I'm like, is that a good goal? I will tell you this. Overall, my goal number one is to live a life that ultimately is worth it, right? Like, and that's a balanced life. Like I want to have a life where at the end of the day, no matter how good or how bad my day is, I get to come home to my family and they're going to be my happiest spot. Like And that's it. Like, that is going to be the base level. These last 12 months of going through quarantine, I've been with my family and they've been my support. And I have a family outside of this, but like, that's important. Like, I want to always protect my family and those relationships and take care of those relationships and make sure that I'm there for them, because this is like a one-time thing. Like, right now, I'm away from my kids for the longest I've ever been away from my kids, because my wife is shooting a movie in Canada. I'm here in LA shooting a show. I couldn't go to Canada because I didn't have a work permit and because I'm shooting my show. And so my wife has the kids now, and they're going to have them, and I'm going to get them later. But it's hard. It's hard. And I want to avoid those moments. I don't want to go 30 days without seeing my kids. So, you know, I want to protect that. So I think for a family, that goal is important. I think the goal of, like, these are base. But like, I want to be healthy. I want to stay healthy. Like, I feel like I've had moments in my life where I've been so focused on work, I've been so focused on anything, that I don't really take care of myself. It's like, and I'm not just what I produce. I am who I am. And if I don't fill myself with watching something that inspires me, if I don't fill myself with, like, you know, reading a book to my kid, playing basketball with my kid, doing Legos, checking out of work, if I don't do those things, I am not a good person. So if I build the base at home, not to say that's going to make my life perfect, but it's going to be, I want to just build the base that I know is not going to fall apart. So that's, you know, that's a big goal for me. And I try very hard to just always have that mantra of, I want to be happy. And I want to, like, yeah. So that's like my emotional goal, and continue to build these relationships with my mom and my dad, who are both still alive, and dig in and go deeper with myself. Went back to therapy and really have been in, I think for the first time, have been able to go to places that I haven't been able to go. And that's good.
How long have you been back in?
Probably about a year and a half. And I had multiple stints. I've done multiple stints of therapy, and sometimes I've gone to therapy and I got it. And I was like, okay, good. And I'm out and I'm back, and I need, you know, and then I came, oh, I need it again. So I have a very, like, open door policy with it, you know, like, oh, this is where I, you know, and, yeah, so I like it. And I feel like maybe I'm a little bit more honest with myself. I feel like I grew. I know I'm talking a lot about my family, but it did make a big difference to me. It did make a big deal to me, like, having these children I'm responsible for, having this thing where I can't be as egotistical as I am or narcissistic as I am, because I have to be out there. And this business requires you sometimes to be egotistical and narcissistic to kind of move forward. So how do I bring that forward? So that is, like, that's my, like, life goal, is just to kind of continue to do the health and wellness and make sure that that's, like, that should be the top goal. And then everything else below it, let's figure it out. Let's figure it out for this year, for this, you know. I want to make sure that I don't do anything half-heartedly anymore. Mm-hmm. I think there's some things that I would sand the edges off of and be like, well, yeah. But now I really ask myself, do I want to do that? Do I really want to do that? I can do that. I know I can do that. But do I want to do it? And, like, an opportunity came up to me the other day, and I know I could put this thing together. And I was like, no. I've taken opportunities in the past where I've never said no. I'm like, well, here's an opportunity. Who am I to say no? The money's good and I should do this, but it's not going to make me happy. And I would think of all these things, you know, like, oh, and so I'm trying to be more honest with myself. I'm trying to work with people who feel the same way that I do about treating people, you know, creating an environment. I want to work with people who elevate me, and I just don't elevate them. I want to elevate people too, but I also just don't want to always be in that position. So I'm looking for those relationships. And then as far as, like, you know, goals, like more like specific goals, I think I'm always looking to frighten myself, challenge myself, and do things differently. Like, I like when I'm afraid. I like when I go on a set and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can, you know, and whether that, like, I directed a documentary this year, which I didn't ever do before. I would like to try to do, I've done directing before, but I was like, oh, I want to embrace that. I've never written a movie script. I'm like, I should try to do that. I want to get back into actually creating a show. I haven't done that for myself. I have a tendency to push other people in front of me. Like, I'll like, oh, this is a great idea. Let me get these people to do that. And then I will step back and not do it. I'm never selfish. And I don't want to figure out a way to be selfish, but also keep this idea of like creating something bigger and trying things and experimenting and following the passion that I have and not worrying about what people think of that passion. So yeah, that, I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff I'm kind of throwing at you, but that's a couple of things I've been thinking about.
Those are good goals. I like your goals. it's something that a mindset I had to switch as well, as far as like just taking all opportunities in a lot of places in the self-help world is talking about switching from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset.
Yeah.
And going like, oh, if I don't take this, who knows what's going to come? And now it's like, well, other things will come. What is for me is for me. And just knowing that, like, if I don't take this, it's going to go to someone else. And maybe that's kind of how I've been looking at roles lately, especially because I've been trying to write and do my show about my son for so long. And then occasionally I'll get offers to go do something else that would push my project into the background a little bit. And I always just go like, oh, if it's not something, I'll read it. I always read it. And I go, but if it's not something that I feel I'm like backflipping over and that it's making my life, then I don't take it, because it will make somebody else's life better.
I've never regretted a role that I haven't gotten. I don't think. Maybe one. But like, you know, like.
Which one?
I'm trying to think of like what, because I know that I've said it before. I'm like, well, okay, here's a perfect example. I didn't know I wanted to be on SNL. I think, like, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, SNL is fun. But when I got older, it wasn't like my goal is to be on SNL. At one point, Lorne Michaels held an audition at UCB, and everyone got to do a sketch. And out of that night where a bunch of people performed, all famous people, some people who actually are on SNL and have been on SNL, they called me to audition. And all of a sudden, it went from this thing of, whoa, this thing I didn't know was even in my reach. Like, now it's in my reach. And I wanted it. I really wanted it. And I didn't get it. I auditioned 3 more times in this every successive year, which was great. But every time I, auditioned, I was like, oh, bum, bum, bum. But then Human Giant came. And I would never in a million years take SNL over Human Giant, because I learned so much more on Human Giant. It was my own thing. Now, that's not a slight on SNL. It's just simply like, it is a different experience. And sometimes like the goal that you sometimes think that you want doesn't actually get you to where you want to be. And so I mean, I'm trying to think in a movie, like, you know, look, there's one part in a movie that I was like, oh, I really like this part. I think I could kill this part. The movie didn't do well, but I was like, oh, I could have done that part really well, you know, but but like, and the person who did the part did a great job. It just, but like, you know, I don't live in that regret that much. Because I'm really now thinking, like, what did I audition for that I really wanted? I mean, I definitely auditioned for a Noah Baumbach movie at one point, and I auditioned to be the boyfriend of Scarlett Johansson at the end of the movie where him and Adam Driver were the marriage movie. And I auditioned for that part. And, you know, I didn't know, because he didn't get a script. He didn't get anything. He's got like a page. I was like, I don't know how big this character is. And I was like, oh, I want this. I love Noah Baumbach. He's the best. I think one of my dreams would be to work with him. And I didn't get it. And I was bummed. But then I looked at that part in the movie, and it basically, the character is like in the far background for most of it. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, all right, there'll be something else, you know, and not to no slight on anything, but it's like, it wasn't what I thought it was anyway. So, okay. And something else will come around. And, you know, Harold Ramis said this thing that I always think about. And I tell everybody this, which is like, fame isn't finite. Just because someone gets something doesn't mean that you will not get that thing. And, you know, the minute we kind of free ourselves from that idea that someone took your thing, no one took your thing. It wasn't your thing to have. And, you know, that thing may be the thing that makes them, but it may not have made you, you know, your thing will come.
I agree. I think that's a mindset I've had very early, and it's been very freeing for me. And it's something that's a constant reminder sometimes when I'm like, well, like, oh, this person got something that sounds cool. But then I kind of go like, you're just in your lane. You're doing your thing. You have more things than you ever thought you would even now. So just keep swimming in your lane. It's fun.
But it's hard. It's hard to keep your eyes on your own paper because we're in a town where normally where you hear about things, you go out, oh, I got this, I did. But now it's even worse because Twitter, Instagram, here's a screen grab of my Deadline article. Here's a screen grab of my thing. Here I am on set. Here I am. You know, so it's like your normal group of friends, you might have like a round robin. Oh, so-and-so got something cool. A couple months pass. Oh, so-and-so got something cool. Another, you know, and then it comes around to you. It's like your round robins a little bit. Here, every day, if you're on Twitter, you're on Instagram, you're seeing somebody you know getting something every day. And sometimes you have to check in with yourself and be like, okay, hold on. What is it? Do I want that? You know, yeah. And sometimes the announcement's just better than even the actual thing. It's like, I just want people to know that I'm wanted in some way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then a trick that I use for me, which is just the constant go like, oh, good news is going around. Hopefully,
I like that.
Some's coming my way. If I keep seeing, oh, my friend is working on this, my friend's like that. Oh, the good news is going around. That's how I try to look at it.
I like that a lot. That's a smart way of looking. That's a healthy way of looking at it.
I want to talk about a couple more things before I let you go. But one thing I want to talk in particular is about like choosing your own lane and trying new things. And one thing that kind of let reassure myself is that I've been doing my Twitch lately for like the past 6-7 months. And then a few months into my Twitch, I saw you pop up on yours. Yeah. And I was like, oh, now I know it's a good idea.
Well, but by the way, here's the thing. You know, you talk about that. And this is like something that I've been really passionate about. Like I really, you know, in this time, I've been looking for outlets, right? Performing outlets and things to do. And I was like, okay, Instagram Live. I was doing this thing with the Black Monday cast. It was fun, but I'm like, I don't love this format. It's like, I got to hold it. It's like, it's not good. I tried YouTube. I was like, okay, I don't like the chat here. And then I saw people like you. I was like, oh, Ron's on there. All right, let me watch it. Let's see what you're doing. All right, cool. And then I was like, this is interesting. Like, and I got involved, but you actually legitimized it for me. And then I got really excited about it. I'm like, oh, I want to try to do this on Twitch. I want to try to do that on Twitch. And I will tell you the things that I want to do and how I want to kind of play in that format and that sandbox has been the stuff that's been the least reception I've ever gotten from people around me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't care. Because when I was doing a podcast, no one gave a shit about my podcast 10 years ago when we started doing a podcast. You know, it's like, you didn't have anything to say because it's not the hot thing. If like right now, everyone's like, do a podcast. That's why you have a million celebrities doing a podcast right now. Because it's like, you know, I'm saying like literally like today, tomorrow, like you see every day, like some new, it's like, oh.
When there's like Obama and Springsteen have a podcast. Yeah.
You're like, oh, and of course your agents are going to be like, you know what? You should have a podcast. Like, well, yeah, no shit. Because everyone's got it. Like, but the thing is like to play in these formats that don't necessarily have an end game. Like there was no end game when I started podcasting. There, and not to say that it's bad to have an end game, but sometimes it's like, just do it because you love to do it. Like, and like I'm having fun on Twitch. I have things I would like to do on Twitch, but if it all just fizzles out and phases out, whatever. But I'm having fun there. It's empowering to me. It's fun. And it's, yeah. So sorry. That's,
I want to talk deeper about it because I never get to talk to someone who's as into it as I am lately. I'll tell you a couple reasons why I love it so much. I love because at first I was just like, oh, like, well, it's just playing video games with people. And then I was like, well, I like playing video games in my free time. I don't want to have someone watching me be on while I play video games. And then the more I did my own research about it, I was like, no, it's just one of the truest direct-to-consumer marketing opportunities you can ever get. People who, if they follow you, they must like you for some reason.
Yeah.
Especially if they're willing to sit and watch you play games or I watch comedy. Like you said, I do all the things that I want to do or that I think are silly and weird, like my show Get High, Watch Wrestling, that I'm like, oh, no company's going to come and pick this up, but I can do it on Twitch. And one of my favorite aspects of it is just just watching those analytics where I'm like, oh, and all of Hollywood, every target seems to just move when yep. I get, when I think I have the right resume, just, they just move the target. But on Twitch, I see the exact numbers they want me to hit. Yeah. I see the things and I'm like, this is so refreshing. I love this.
Well, it's like, it gives you again, like Twitch is a place where you have complete and total control to do the thing that you want to do, build the audience. Like, it's been something that I've been very passionate about building. And when I committed to Twitch, I was like, all right, I'm not going to like do this half-assed. And it was like, I'm building it here. I have some regularity here. Now I want to build this Discord. And I started building that Discord and I want to experiment with shows and different people and try things. And I'm not on it as much as I would like to be, but I'm trying to make sure that I'm on it consistently, interacting with the Discord and knowing that it's a place for me to try stuff. It's a place for me to fail. It's a place for me to just have fun and hang out. And one of the things I love about UCB is that was what UCB was. It's midnight on Friday. I'm going up to UCB. What are we doing? Oh, we're all dressed as robots and we're doing a robot improv show. Got it. Done. The audience is down for it. We're going to do this thing. You know, is it the best thing I've ever done? Absolutely not. But that doesn't make a difference because we're all that we've agreed to. It's $5. Who gives a shit? Twitch, it's free. It's like, let's go. Let's have fun. Well, yeah. there'll be something out of it. Let's get something out of this. It's real. It's genuine. The
thing I love about it, and compared to what we talk about podcasts right now, is that I feel like, and why I like starting now, is that the barrier of entry to Twitch is just high enough. It's just a slight yes. hurdle
yes.
of like, if you don't have enough, if you don't have a PC, if you don't have enough yep. technical proficiency, it's going to make you not want to do, because I mean, even learning how to use Discord was off-putting to me.
Oh my gosh, learning OBS and all that stuff. And it took me a month to get my setup the way I want to get it. Now I got 3 monitors going. I got the whole thing. I'm gonna love it, but it took a while.
Yeah, but that's kind of what you want, is to have to work for it. When it's easy, I think feel the same way about comedy and stand-up and the way the pandemic has affected it. It was like, well, yeah, we were in a big golden age and everybody was doing it and a lot of people were getting it. It was yeah. fun, and I don't begrudge anyone, but I see the same thing because I'm a sports fan as well. It's like, well, it went from like, well, you had to prove yourself, to now like, oh, you're 2 years in. We think maybe here's yeah. something.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think gone are the days of the million followers and 1,000 retweets or whatever, you know, whatever the metric you want to say. And I think what it is about catering to an audience that likes you, that wants to grow with you, and that energy. Like, I've watched my podcast over the 10 years that I've done that podcast with Jason and June grow. And it's grown because I think we've been patient, we've built an audience, and I love the people who listen to our show. I love engaging the people that we like you respect them and you, I don't know, like it's tricky. I'm trying to like figure out, like, I think of it as a more earnest and honest connection with the audience that is there to see you. And yes, and it can build, and I don't have to do everything on that level, but why not have that level? Because I know when I was growing up, if some of my people that I liked in comedy were doing that, oh my God, it would have been the best. If like anybody yes. from like the Ben Stiller show was on Twitch.
Yeah. And they were like, oh, you could play Super Mario with Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
They're like, what?
Absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, so I like it. And I know some people are like, well, no, I like to keep myself at a distance. But the world is changing. You know, Reese Witherspoon is like, you know, doing, you know, everyone's getting in the muck. I mean, look, you said it already. Obama and Springsteen are doing a podcast. They don't need to do a podcast. No one needs to do this stuff, but they're trying to figure out ways to connect, show who they are. And what we are trying to do at all times is show that we can create and who we are and get involved. And yeah, I don't know. It's like, the end game to me isn't always about the career end game. Sometimes the end game to me is just, am I having fun? Am I doing something that I'm passionate about? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, good things follow. I always follows. I don't know how. I'm not saying what is going to follow, but a good thing will follow.
It's the kind of same thing of going like, am I doing something that I would want to do 10 years from now?
Right.
And if you are, you're like, well, keep pushing him forward, no matter how many people are watching or how many people are into it, just keep doing. That's why I'm like, oh, I'll be playing video games in my 50s. So why not keep twitching?
Adapt. And I'm not saying that in a way of like a Silicon Valley way. I'm just saying, like, why are we afraid? Like, one of the things I respected the most, I look up to two people who've been in this business for a very long time. And they're very different people, but I'll tell you both. I look up to Will Ferrell, because when I look at Will Ferrell, I go, here's a guy who is huge movie star, just amazing, just an amazing guy all the way around. Nice, personable. I mean, I hope that was your experience on, talks to the crew, doesn't go to his trailer, like just a lovely guy. I watched him. I worked with him for a couple of days, and just a lovely, down to earth guy, huge movie star. But one night we got a call, cause I do the show at UCB called Facebook with a bunch of my friends. And we got a call. Hey, Will is working on a show. He wants to do like a live stage show. Can he come and take your slot one night? He doesn't want to tell anybody what it is, but we know that you sell out. Can he take your slot and do this show? We're like, absolutely. Our audience will go bananas for that. So we come out on stage. Hey, welcome to Facebook. Tonight, we got something special. Will Ferrell. What? And then everyone freaks out. And I watch that guy get on stage to do a reading of that George Bush show that he did on Broadway or off Broadway, wherever he did. And he did that show. He had written it, I guess, like in 2 weeks, and he wanted to test it out. And I was so impressed that here's a guy who has everything to lose in a way, getting out on stage, doing something untested material, reading off of papers, futzing around, fooling around. I'm like, wow, that's cool. And I saw him do that, like that playfulness of that. I always remember that night. Like, wow, he's not big. And why would he even want to do a Broadway show? Why? Why would he want to do a movie in Spanish? Why? Like, you know, it's like he makes weird choices, and he does, you know, he wanted to make that Eurovision movie. But they are very uncommercial choices that are very successful for him. And I'm very impressed with that. And then I look at somebody like a Eugene, and there's so many people I admire, but these are people that I feel like have shown me interesting things. Eugene Levy. And I look at that guy and I go, wow, look at that career. Here's a guy who, you know, came up in Second City, was a part of one of the most influential shows, you know, SCTV. Then, you know, made these movies, sometimes starring like in a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movie. All right, whatever, in the American Pie movies. But he's funny. And he's in all the American Pie movies. And you know what? Those movies kind of suck, like the ones that don't come out in the theater, like the 9 other ones. But he's funny. He's fucking showing up. He's funny. But he's in all the Christopher Guest movies too. And he's very, very different, very funny. And then what is his son comes there and they work on this idea for Schitt's Creek and like really create it together when you hear them talk about what he brought to the table on Schitt's Creek. And I know that Dan Levy brought a lot, but like, I feel like he was very instrumental. It's like, not, here's a guy, older guy, just keep on going. Like, keep, what's next? How can I do something? I won't say no, but I'm going to make sure that I shine. I'll do this. And not to say like, they're very different celebrities. Like, I mean, obviously Gene Levy is, I think, now a little bit more elevated because of Schitt's Creek, but there's a lot of years where everything people will be like, oh yeah, that dude, the dad from American Pie, like, you know, but not knowing all the other work or all the other things or Waiting for Guffman and all that stuff.
No, I love it. Yeah. I love both of those actors. And I agree with you. In my time, my couple of scenes working with Will Ferrell, especially at the time period that it happened, because it was very early in my acting career, was truly enjoyable and lovely. And just, yeah. he was open to me just improvising things. One of my best experiences in my life was I was so nervous and so thinking, and I was always, typically when I'm nervous like that, I'm more funny when they call cut than when they
We all are. I mean, once the camera goes off me, I'm giving you the best take I'm going to give you. Like, why is the camera here now?
And so they call cut and I'm joking around. And then I hear Will Ferrell laughing at some joke I say. And like that, from that moment on, I was like, oh, I'm funny. I'm funny.
Yeah.
He's laughing at me. I'm funny. I can do this. And yeah. And he was truly great. One of the funnest experience of this pandemic was my wife and I going through Living Single, watching every episode of that. And He is in one episode of Living Single where he has one line and then takes off. It is not funny, but it is so inspiring to go like, you know, just one of the things like we all start from somewhere. The most famous person in this series has one line and then goes away forever.
Well, but the thing is, and I think, you know, with these people, and again, there are so many, but I think what I love about it is like, they're not afraid to keep on trying and doing something different. And, you know, like, I think Kevin Hart will be interesting to see where his career goes. I mean, that guy is doing, you know, he's in Chase Bank. He's doing Audible ads. He's got podcasts. He's got movies. He's got TV shows. He's got reality shows. He's got workout shows. He's got whatever, you know, like, that's fine. We'll see what, you know, and I actually am a fan of what he does, but let's see where he, like, that's all right now. It's like, I like to look at somebody who's like done, like you're like, oh, well, here's a 30-year career and they keep on going. I'm not afraid to get off on stage. Cause I think you and I both know there are some standups. Like here, for example, I'm not shitting on this person, but don't you think like Eddie Murphy to me is my idol. Like Eddie Murphy was the guy who defined my, most of my comedy. Like I was like, this is fun. Like whatever that was funny to me. Eddie Murphy was funny to me. And all of his movies, I love it all. And all I want to see is Eddie Murphy just kind of be Eddie, like just be Eddie Murphy. And I know like, but he's not done stand-up for such a long time. But then to get on stage now, it's so much weight on the back of him to get up. And it's like, oh, I want to get in that point where it's not that much weight, right? Because yeah. I know that he'll be funny and he is always funny and he's great when he pop. Like I'm sure he's great in everything he does. It's just sort of like, I never want to be that person where it's like, I've gotten out of the game for so long. I don't know who's in the game and I'm afraid to step your foot in there. And that's just somebody I'm thinking of, but it's like, it's not, he's still making movies obviously, but it's like, but there's a nervousness of like not wanting to get up on stage.
Well, we see it and not to get personal or put anyone down, but you do see that like, and again, we can relate it to sports or any other type of craft that the game evolves, everything changes. And if you're not actively in it at the time, you're not watching those changes. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And the comedy that was working for Eddie Murphy back then obviously probably would not work today.
No.
And you say it becomes a lot of pressure on you when that should be the opposite of what comedy puts on you. It should be this like free flowing. I know who I am. I'm confident in myself. And I will just say you could see it. The last special where I saw that completely was Ellen's special, where it was like, you weren't in it for so long and you were so nervous. And I can see the lack of cohesion. I can see that other people probably wrote some of these jokes.
Right.
I can see all of that. And then the fact that you were like, I need to call it relatable, when it's like, that's the last thing you are. And then if you were really comfortable in yourself, you could have leaned into that instead of trying to pretend like you are something that you're not.
Well, and I think, but that comes from a slight self-awareness of continually trying to do things and not know what the hit ratio will be, right? Like, because I think the longer you take yourself, you've said it. Like, if you're not in the game, like, I always want to be the person where, like, I had a meeting with Mel Brooks and it was amazing that I had this. Wait a second, Ron, I don't know if I've ever told you this. I'm just making sure. I'm pretty sure this is not a lie. Okay, so, all right. So I had a meeting with Mel Brooks. He got interviewed on How Did This Get Made by one of the guys who was basically doing a companion piece called like Origin Stories. He was amazing. I wrote Mel Brooks a letter and I said, one time I would love to take you out for coffee, get a phone call. Yeah, he would love to meet with you. So I meet Mel Brooks. And here's a guy who, I mean, the minute I meet him, he's got everything that I would want, like every energy that you want. He's funny. He's making jokes. His office is amazing. He's telling all these stories. And we sit down and we start talking. He goes, I want to talk to you about something. And I go, yeah. He goes, Spaceballs 2. You want to write Spaceballs 2 with me? And I didn't even know. It was the kind of, what, you know, like, and he's like, yeah, let's talk about it a little bit. And, you know, and I was saying, well, you know, there's some issues, right? Like you have some issues here that, people have passed. How do you continue it? And Ron, I'm saying hand to God, I believe this is not a lie, because I don't know why I've never told you this. I was like, well, who should be like the barf, the John Candy role? And he said you.
Oh.
And I was like, wow. So like Mel Brooks knows you. Like, you know, and here's a guy who is 90 years old, 89 years old, like a handful of years ago. Like he goes, oh yeah, you would be good at that. And he goes and he liked Milena Vanitrub for another part. He's like, oh, she could be good for something. And I was like, wow. It's like, I don't know how he knows these people, but I knew that every night he would go over to Carl Reiner's house and they'd watch a movie. And he'd say, oh yeah, we watched Deadpool last night. Oh, we watched this. Mm. So he's keeping involved in the thing. And I just was like, to sit across from him and have him tell me that, I was like, wow. And he also had a crazy idea for the lead, that who I won't reveal, because he basically was like, this person should be the person. And it was clear that that person is a pretty big star. And he was like, no, that person's not a star yet. And I have to say that time proved him correctly, that that person is not a star. Like in that moment, that person was a star. And he's like, that person's not a star yet. We can get him and he could be in here. But I was always impressed with that. I can't believe I never told you that. Yeah.
No, I like hearing that. It's great. I had heard secondhand from people who I did not necessarily believe that from. So I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. But now, nice to hear it. And it's been recorded and it makes me feel real good.
Yeah. But I mean, like, don't you want to be 90 years old and know about Ron Funches? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I do.
I get mad now when I don't get mad because I love finding new people, but like I become aware and I go like, oh, I'm not that much older, but there are 22, 23 year old, 24 year old comedians out there that are killing it that I'm going to get to learn and hopefully get to work with and learn from.
Yeah.
And that excites me. It makes me very excited. Paul, the last thing, I mean, that's two things. I'm sorry, but I got to ask you this other one.
Yeah.
It's just a bit about your wife, June, who I love. I'm a big fan of. I would love to get her on the podcast as well. I would hope so. That would be very difficult for you not to be. But I saw an interview that you did or read something where you talked about her being kind of the reason why you've been more active in activism and just social issues in general. And I've seen June, and well, again, if you could just ask her to be on my podcast,
I will.
Because I would like to talk to her about getting arrested and things like that. But can you just talk about the motivation that she's given you and your shift, and then also the balance that you guys have in both being a couple that is active in entertainment and also active in being parents?
Yeah, well, okay, so a lot to unpack there, and I'll kind of do my...
I know, I'm sorry.
No, I'll give you a kind of a quick response to a lot of that, which is, I think a lot of the times in comedy, there is an attitude of not wanting to be vulnerable, right? And I think you want to be vulnerable on screen, like people want to be like, oh, I feel bad for him, oh, you know, but like to show up. And when you are behind a social issue, a political issue, an environmental issue, it is the most vulnerable you can be, because people will come out of the woodwork and attack you, right? Like, I mean, in a way, like, you know, and it's not, you know, if it's real, if it's not, but you're putting yourself out there saying, I believe in this. I can go behind a joke and be like, that's not funny. I don't care. All right, yeah, it may sting a little bit, but that's not me. That's a joke. Okay, maybe that joke didn't work, but I have another joke that'll come up, or that show didn't work, or that whatever. But when I'm saying, like, I believe in X, I believe in Y, I'm going to stand up for this thing, you put yourself in an incredibly vulnerable position. And I think that for me, I definitely was. And June and I have been together for 15 years. And over the course of that time, you know, June has really opened me up to questioning things, looking at things, having a perspective. She's a very strong voice in my life and has always been. And I've grown with her and I've seen her get to be stronger in voice. And I've been incredibly impressed with her. And I've been incredibly impressed with her sense of building community and supporting community. And so for me, it's starting now to come a lot more naturally. I'm going to put myself out there. Sometimes I'll be messy. And that's the thing. I am messy. June you can ask her a question and she will fucking have a great answer. You're like, God damn it. I wish I could speak like that. But when I get like emotional, when I feel something, I get mealy mouthed. I get like, I don't know when to just period, mm-hmm. end of sentence, like kind of like, you know, and I want to make sure I'm saying the right thing. I'm still learning how to find that confident voice. And one of the things I learned about that was I can't wing it. I'm talking about that in my professional career, but I can't just throw it together. I have to be thoughtful. I have to understand the issue. I know what I feel. The feeling is easy. The feeling is base. That's wrong. I don't like that. We need to do better. But how am I going to do better? What is wrong about it? What is my research? I want to go more than a tweet. So, for example, when I marched with Jane Fonda in Washington and got arrested, I gave a speech there. And, you know, Jane was like, you know, come up here and you could say a speech, do the thing. And I worked on that speech and I delivered that speech. And I didn't try to present myself as someone who was an expert in this world. I presented myself as somebody who was passionate about being involved in helping this world, right? But I had to work on it. I had to like sit in my room, in my hotel room that night and like make sure that I said the speech like 10 times out loud because I needed to know where it was. And that's what I need to do for myself. But it also has given me a lot of strength in the sense of like, we had a thing at our public school this year and I was able to help be a part of the diversity and inclusion board at our public school. We have a public school and there are some issues on that board with some members. And we were able to, I did something that was fucking so scary in that thing. And which is to stand up in front of a room, a virtual room and speak about something that was, I thought was wrong. And I would never have done that. I didn't want to do that, but I knew I had to do that or no one else would do that. And I'm just trying to take more, I'm just trying to be open. I'm trying to listen. I'm trying to read. I'm trying to engage my friends. I'm trying to, I don't know. I like, so yes, for 15 years, she's been an influence who has been continually opening me up and she is a rock and a pillar for me. Not take away all the other parts of it, but in this world where I can say, hey, I'm doing this. I feel this. And can you help me articulate this? Or I feel stupid because I can't articulate this. What am I saying here? And so she is that person I can be dumb in front of. I'd rather be dumb in front of her and instead of dumb in front of other people. That doesn't mean like, it was so funny. I was watching this interview yesterday with Noah Centineo. I don't know, on TikTok or it just came up on whatever it came up on. And the girl asked Noah Centineo, are you a feminist? And I paused. I was like, well, what would I say in that moment? And you know, I'm like, how would I answer that? Because I don't know, like, I want to make sure that, how would I answer it? What would I say? You know, and I'm like constantly trying to make sure that I am in control of this part of myself, which I often don't ever think about. Like, you know, when I'm doing comedy or when I'm doing acting, it's part of it is like kind of opening yourself up and doing everything. But I just try to be more thoughtful, especially in regards to social justice and issues of equality and, there's so many things out there. Anyway, like, so she's helping me. I'm nowhere near where she is. But I get strength from her and I get power from, you know, following in her footsteps. I was very proud to get arrested after her and ask her for all her advice of how that's all going to work. But it was amazing. It was amazing to see who wouldn't get arrested too. And look, I understand I'm a white man. It's very easy for me to get arrested. I'm not saying everyone get arrested, do the thing. Like, I was like,
let June and Paul do that.
Yeah. But yeah, but you know, and like, and so like, there's like, it's also like the idea of like what you're saying. Like, so it's like the idea is, and my message isn't like, go out there and get arrested. That like, that's not the idea. The idea is like, we're getting arrested there to get press for why we are there. Right. That's what's getting the word out. Is yes, my picture will be in TMZ. June's picture will be in TMZ. And it will say arrested at this blah, 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 blah thing. Because, and then someone reads it and goes, oh. So at least you hear, you know, I mean, that was a smart idea. Jane Fonda, incredibly, another amazing person. So very long-winded answer on that. you know, as far as career, you know, I feel like June believes in me the most, but also doesn't care. Like, and I mean that in the best way. Like, like June doesn't like judge me by my career. She's a supporter of my career and doesn't care about certain things that I do. We're talking about Twitch. I don't think she gives a shit, but she knows that I'm passionate about it. And she knows that I'm like having fun doing it. And that's all that's important to her. And she's a person I can lean on. She's a person that surprises me and I surprise her. And I think we are always challenging each other to go deeper with each other. And like I said, 15 years together, 10 years married, two kids, ups and downs in this quarantine. And, you know, that's ups and downs in our relationship, but we get through it and we build stronger. And so she is my ally. She's like my best friend. She is my supporter. And no matter how many times I might get irritated about this or that, there is a bond that we have that isn't going to go anywhere. And as far as parents, that's the hardest thing because we're both different people. We're very different people. And I think we will get like, it's sort of like, we both will get the end result just very differently. And it doesn't mean one right way is right and one way is wrong. And I think what we are always kind of balancing is who's alpha. You know, I think June's alpha. I think I'm an alpha. And I think we fight over alpha. And I think, especially with raising kids, what we've really learned to do is go, this is you, this is me. I'm not going to get in your way. You're not getting in my way. And then it will switch and then we'll open up and we'll come together. So we're constantly leaning in and pulling out, going in, you know, and it doesn't mean we're not going to step on each other's toes, but it was a dance and it is a dance that we continue to figure out who is best served to do the parts that need to be done. And there's no guilt in, I don't do that, but you don't do this. And I don't sit around and going, well, I did that and you did that. Like we try, and sometimes it will come down to that. Well, I did this. I do so much. I do this. Well, I'm doing so much too. I think that like, you know, it's like always trying to show each other. I'm working here, but that's normal. And our relationship is just about, we don't have a perfect relationship. We're perfecting a relationship, if that makes sense. And it's perfect now, or, you know, or it's not perfect now. It's like, I never want to be done building this relationship. I want to continue to carve it out and get it better and be better with each other. And that's, you know, that's probably the quickest way I can kind of summarize all of those things.
Yeah, makes sense to me. If you're not constantly renovating, your building's decaying and you're going
to
shut down. Nobody wants that. Now, lastly, Paul, very, very, very last thing. It's just for a piece of advice, a little nugget of wisdom, maybe just something you grew up with, maybe something you've just been thinking about recently. It doesn't matter what it is to us, just something to help our getting better community get better.
I love this. I feel you talked about a lot of good pieces of advice. And, you know, I want to reiterate one, which is keep your eyes on your own paper, right? That's that's an important one. Keep your eyes on your, but we talked about that. I think fame isn't finite. And I think that like, let's put that across the board. You don't have to be in this acting world to be in that. Jobs aren't finite. There are your position. There may be another, you know, whatever it is. Those are two things. Those are really tenets that I keep strongly and I look to a lot. I got a good one that I've been thinking about a lot. Be open to being wrong and not equating apologizing as something that is weak or makes you feel guilty. And the way I kind of say it is, I think the first defense, you know, if I say to you like, oh, Ron, you said to me the other day, or if you said to me, Paul, you know, when we were doing the podcast, you said this, and that made me feel shitty. And if my first response, well, I didn't mean to make you feel shitty. I was just saying, you don't understand why I'm saying it. I'm trying to get to the spot where you go, you made me feel shitty. And I would say to you, oh my gosh, I am so sorry I did that. That is the last thing that I wanted to do to you. Thank you for telling me that. I really truly apologize. What I meant was this, but I totally understand where you're coming from. and do better. And like it's some version of that. Like, I know, like, why can't I just say that? Why do I have to be defensive about it? You told me I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. Doesn't matter why. Doesn't matter if it was my intention. Doesn't matter anything. I'm telling you, I'm hearing you, and I'm sorry. And then we can move on. And that's something that's really hard for me to do. And I'm trying to be better at it. I think I can actually do it really good in a professional setting. I have a harder time doing it in a personal setting.
Yeah, it's often the case. But it's so quicker and easier as opposed to defending yourself and immediately going into this position. But I know being on both sides of that, that for me, there's been problems where I'm like, the thing that comes up in that you kind of just go like, oh, what? No, I love you so much. I care about you. How dare you think that I would do that?
How dare you? I mean, that's the fucked up thing is like, we're so, we don't want to hurt the person that we love. So it gets defensive when the truth is what people are saying is, hey, I'm a hurt. And it doesn't matter if how you, you did it. You did it. You hurt them. You didn't mean to. It doesn't make a difference if you meant to, or you didn't mean to. You did it.
Well, it would be weirder if you meant to.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, so that's my piece of advice. Try to destigmatize. I'm sorry.
I agree with that. And I'd say to add to it on the under end, I like to destigmatize presenting your feelings, letting people know that they've hurt your feelings.
Yes.
Because there's been many times where when I was younger, I would just hold these things in and I would build resentments and I would take one true small thing and build five other false things on top of it that that weren't real at all, but that I had put into my mind. And just from, I had a thing with my business manager recently who I love, who has been keeping my business and my life afloat through the pandemic. But I asked him for a couple of things and I felt like he didn't respond to me. And the old me would have been like, oh, he doesn't care about me because I don't make enough money. I'm not one of his biggest clients. So I probably, all right, well, I'm just going to go start looking for somebody else. But instead, I just wrote an email and I said, hey, I appreciate all the things you're doing for me. I just want to let you know when you don't respond to me like this, it makes me feel that you're not paying attention to me. And we had a whole conversation. And we got everything taken care of.
Well, and that, you know what? I think good for you. And I'll say that, you know, to add one more thing, not to keep this podcast going forever, but I will say, frame it. Can we frame it better? And I think a lot of the times I got into a thing recently with somebody and I was like, this is not about this. This is about this. Let's just talk about, like, let's frame the conversation. We are having a conversation about, you didn't respond to me. And that hurt my feelings, not X, Y, and Z, because what you said, we can build it all out. Or then when they get defensive, then you go all the way out. It's like, identify what you're feeling, why you're feeling. That also is an emotional maturity too. You have to go, what am I feeling right now? What am I truly feeling? Am I feeling all this? And if you may be, it may be like, that may be the straw that broke the camel's back, but you may have to say like, hey, I want to talk to you because X, Y, and Z. This is what I really want to focus on. It has nothing to do with you as a person. And I tried very hard now to do that too. It's not about you as a professional. This is not about you as a wife. It's not about you as a, you know, a partner. This is not about you. You know, this is about this moment. Can we just talk about this moment? Mm-hmm. And almost like you try to diffuse that reaction. And sometimes it will work and sometimes it won't.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know, and because it is so hard for people, if you can keep on saying, let's not go out there, stay here. If you want to eventually go out there, we can, but let's just do this first. Let's just do this cube, you know, and then we can move on. And I think that that's because I think a lot of these things are like a small crack and then they just expand. And if you don't get where the crack started and you start up top, you're not fixing the problem.
No, absolutely. I appreciate that. I think that's one of the most practical pieces of advice is that we received. So I appreciate that, Paul. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I truly, again, you know, always really funny anytime, you know, you're like asked me to do a set or if I've asked you to be on the set. You've always been very nice to me, and I've always loved working with you. I think you're one of the bright lights in the business. But I also want to say this is the first time I really had a conversation with you like this, and I really appreciated it.
I feel it the same way. What a pleasure. A pleasure to talk to you, and I can't wait to do it again.
Thank you for coming, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.